Poland will send Ukraine fighter jets while the U.S. races to locate more ammunition.
The demand is insatiable, so that's required the U.S. and allies to really dig up as much of its own stocks as they can.
Plus, China's Xi will visit Moscow next week to deepen ties with Russia, and we'll recap the wild week in markets so far. It's Friday, March 17th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Chinese leader Xi Jinping will visit Moscow next week for talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Kremlin says the two leaders will discuss the expansion of their international cooperation. Beijing has provided diplomatic support to Moscow as the Ukraine conflict has deepened Russia's international isolation. China has scooped up Russian oil and gas and sold microchips and other advanced technologies that can have military uses. Speaking of wartime support, Poland is sending fighter jets to Ukraine, becoming the first Western country to support Kyiv with planes. Polish President Andrzej Duda said that Ukraine is getting four MiG-29 jet fighters in the coming days, and he hinted that more deliveries could follow. The Soviet-era MiGs are flown regularly by Ukrainian pilots. Duda said that the planes would be initially replaced with South Korean FA-50 jets and later with American F-35s. The jet delivery comes as Ukraine prepares for a spring counteroffensive against Russian forces. We'll have a lot more on how the U.S. and its allies are scouring the globe to locate enough ammunition to bolster Ukraine ahead of that military push later in the show. Meanwhile, the NATO alliance could take a step closer to gaining a member today. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Finland and Sweden applied for NATO membership last spring, and every current NATO member has approved their membership applications, with the exception of Hungary and Turkey. Our Middle East correspondent Jared Malson is in Ankara, where the Turkish president is expected to announce today that the country will drop its objections to Finland joining NATO.
This ends almost a year of diplomatic wrangling after Turkey threatened to veto both Finland and Sweden, and that's connected to Turkey's concerns about Kurdish militant groups that it says are present in both of those countries. What's happened here is that Turkey is saying that the issue is really with Sweden and that they don't really have any objections to Finland. So it's a huge diplomatic breakthrough, and it paves the way to a huge expansion of NATO, including the 800-mile-long border between Finland and Russia, ending decades of neutrality in which Finland has tried to manage its relationship with Russia. And now they're saying after the invasion of Ukraine, our security is also at risk and that they need to be under the protective umbrella of NATO.
And we are exclusively reporting that a group of U.S. lawmakers and Silicon Valley executives are quietly mobilizing against China's involvement in the U.S. tech industry. Ahead of the TikTok CEO's testimony on Capitol Hill next week, the group is planning to meet for a private dinner to discuss China, national security, and the intensifying competition between the country's tech sectors. WSJ reporter Georgia Wells explains what is unique about the group, which is spearheaded by a former Google policy advisor, and what concerns it's hoping to address.
It's interesting in how bipartisan this group is, and also uniquely bicoastal. It's bringing together so many people who don't have a whole lot in common, but who all have anxiety about the role of China in kind of the tech competition between the two countries. The lawmakers attending, many of them have described to me two concerns about TikTok. It's user data, so the concern that the Chinese government could lean on ByteDance, which is TikTok's parent company, to hand over data about American users. And the other is about the Chinese government's ability to lean on ByteDance to influence the content that American users see on TikTok.
Markets are gaining this morning, with stocks closing higher in Asia and Europe and the U.S. set for a positive trading day. And all of that caps a week of stock swings and a banking crisis that has fundamentally changed investor sentiment and the global economic outlook. And here now to take stock of the wild week so far and where it leaves the Fed ahead of its big rate decision next week is Wall Street Journal markets editor Matthew Thomas. Matthew, I think we all gained a few gray hairs this week, and it's not even over yet. Where are we heading into this final U.S. trading day after several days of pretty major ups and downs?
This week began with a lot of questions about confidence in the banking system, about moral hazard even, about contagion, all of these words that anyone who works in finance really does not want to hear. The context going into today's session, though, is that Credit Suisse did say yesterday that it had access to more than $50 billion of funding from Switzerland's central bank, and a group of big US banks like Citi and JP Morgan said that they were going to put $30 billion of deposits into First Republic, essentially buying it time. So it really kind of depends what investors want to focus on. If they do focus on the wider questions that have kind of been exposed by the banking turmoil we've seen over the last few weeks, we could still see a down session. But there's definitely enough good news. It does feel like we're likely to end up this week. And actually, I guess one thing to say is a lot of bank stocks have been really hard hit this week, but the indexes have been pretty resilient, right? The S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ are all actually on course for an increase this week.
Matthew, so it seems like maybe some of the worst case scenario predictions that we were discussing earlier this week as it pertains to the banking sector have not exactly come to pass. However, there could be other problem signs here stemming from just the slip in investor confidence that you've been describing, no?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And markets really are a confidence game. Markets and banking, frankly, are a confidence game. If you look at the problems that Silicon Valley Bank faced last week, it essentially was depositors all lost confidence at the same time. That becomes self-fulfilling after a while. And the same thing is true of stock markets as well. It's a question of emphasis now. Do they emphasize the fact that the Fed has stepped in and guaranteed depositors, that the big banks have stepped in and helped keep an institution liquid, that Credit Suisse has got access to funding in Switzerland? Or do they focus on the fact that there's been so much volatility and so many questions have been raised that haven't been entirely addressed?
And finally, Matthew, in terms of questions of emphasis, what bigger question of emphasis is there than a Fed rate hike decision and the explanation that typically accompanies those? We've got one of them coming up next week. Markets could turn on that too, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the really interesting question going into next week, because whatever the Fed does, investors will interpret it in unpredictable ways and in ways that the Fed might not necessarily welcome. So, for instance, if we go back to before the banking turmoil, almost all economists expected the Fed would hike rates. Some expected a 25 basis point hike. Some expected a half a percentage point hike. Some are now saying, though, that the Fed's going to hold. So Goldman Sachs being the most high-profile example. They're saying that the banking turmoil will leave the Fed to pause its rate hikes for now. Now, the problem is that could lead to investors interpreting this as a sign that the banking turmoil is really a banking crisis. But, you know, the Fed has been so clear about its intention to fight inflation. If they're stopping when we all knew they were going to hike 2 weeks ago, maybe things are worse than we realized. That could itself lead to a sell-off in the market. But you take the flip side, let's say the Fed continues on course and does increase interest rates. Well, that's going to lead to treasury bonds falling. The loss of value of treasury bonds on bank balance sheets was one of the big issues that caused some of the drama we've seen over the last week and a half. So there's really no right answer for the Fed.
That was Wall Street Journal markets editor Matthew Thomas reminding us we're all grateful not to have Jerome Powell's job, I guess, over the next few days. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure as always.
Thank you for having me.
And coming up, as Ukraine prepares for a major spring counteroffensive against Russia, its allies are racing to locate enough ammo to supply Kyiv for the fight ahead. We've got that story after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The U.S. is on a global hunt for ammunition. Ukraine's military, which is now in the 13th month of defending against Russia's invasion, is using up ammunition faster than its Western backers anticipated. And that, in turn, is leading the Pentagon to raid its own foreign weapons stockpiles and appeal to its allies for support. But is there enough weaponry to go around? Journal National Security reporter Gordon Lubold has been documenting America's ammunition scramble, and he joins us now with a look at how this is playing out. Gordon, it's a pleasure, as always, to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thanks, Luke.
All right, Gordon, so give us a sense of the shortfall that we're actually seeing here. What is Ukraine's demand for artillery versus what the U.S. and its allies are able to actually supply?
So the demand is insatiable. The war certainly has gone on much longer than anybody anticipated it would be, but Ukraine's consumption of artillery rounds in particular has surpassed anybody's wildest expectations. And so that's required the U.S. and allies to really dig up as much of its own stocks as they can. But what we're reporting today is that now the U.S. is digging into its overseas stocks. These are not necessarily reserves, but these are stocks that the U.S. pre-positions around the world to support American forces, typically wherever they are. And in this case, now they're using that to provide the Ukrainians enough, at least to get them through this next offensive.
Yeah, tell us about those stockpiles. Where are they? What were they supposed to be used for? And is there concern about what it means when you have to draw down from them?
Sure. So as we understand it, most of the 155-millimeter artillery rounds that the U.S. has provided, of about 1 million rounds thus far since last year, most of that has come from American stocks as well as allies stocks. But these pre-positioning locations are in South Korea, Israel, Germany, and Kuwait. And the U.S. is now pulling out of some of those stocks to aid Ukraine in this fight, which probably is going to begin again next month with this quote-unquote offensive that Ukrainians are going to begin. And so, you know, I think it shows the depth to which the U.S. is going to go to support Ukraine.
Is that a risk? I mean, we heard from, for instance, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this week, who was saying it's a distraction that the U.S. is supporting Ukraine as much as we are, given that, as he said, there's weapon stockpiles that are critical for American security that are rapidly being depleted. Is that a concern from the people you've been speaking to?
Sure. I mean, the Pentagon will tell you they're not dipping below their own levels of readiness, and they're not dipping into levels that are going to hurt their readiness. But of course, that's all classified, so it's hard for me to assess. In some previous reporting on this issue last year, you know, we talked to people who said that there was a concern and with the level, the American stocks of these munitions that were quote unquote uncomfortably low. Now, production has kicked into gear a little bit more, not only in the U.S., but also overseas with some of the countries that are capable of producing volumes and the kind of volumes that are needed of this munition, but that production typically is going to take a much longer time.
Finally, Gordon, what is the likelihood Ukraine won't get the ammunition it needs? And if that were to happen, what would be the consequences potentially?
Well, this offensive I keep mentioning that's expected to start sometime next month is kind of a make or break time for this conflict. If the U.S. and its allies aren't able to provide Ukraine with enough of the ammo it needs, as well as other things, air defenses in particular, that could make this offensive kind of fizzle out. The U.S. is digging deep into its pockets and urging allies to dig deep into theirs to provide enough to get through the next several months. But then what? This is a key fight coming up. Looks like they're going to have enough ammo to get through it, but results from the offensive is what's key. And I think then there really is a question of how much more the U.S. and its allies can provide in terms of this critical ammo.
That was Wall Street Journal national security reporter Gordon Lubold. Gordon, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, it's St. Patrick's Day, a day for many people to dust off their shamrocks, order pints of green beer, and join in on the many street parades being held around the world. But the lively festival celebrating all things Irish also holds significant importance when it comes to Irish diplomatic interests abroad. With 36 Irish government representatives visiting 74 cities today, Journal editor Paul Hannon says that Paddy's Day is a perfect example of soft power in action.
Certainly for the Irish government, it makes a lot of sense and it has delivered. This year, for example, the emphasis is on the 25th anniversary of what's known as the Good Friday Agreement, which ended 30 years of conflict in Northern Ireland, and really paving the way for President Biden to visit the island to celebrate that moment. And really, without those kinds of relationships cultivated over many decades around the St. Patrick's events, it's difficult to see that kind of buy-in being as strong. For sure, the amount of US investment in Ireland is partly a reflection of that soft power being accumulated over a long period of time.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.